band goes out at night, but five nights a week. And we go to where people are sleeping rough around the city, and we give them food, we give them blankets. And we're meant to listen. That's part of the job. We're meant to have conversation and listen. And I got a little bit carried away when we first started doing this. And I saw this man sleeping behind a power station up behind Parliament House. And he's a lovely guy, been homeless for a period of time. And I said to him, mate, you don't need to be sleeping out here. I can get you somewhere to stay. And he said, oh, no, that's fine. I said, no, it's fine. It's okay. I can get you somewhere to stay. I insist. I can get you something tonight, right now. And he said, no, it's fine. And I didn't listen. And I jumped immediately into action. And I said, I've got it all organised. It's done. Come with me. So I got him into a place. And I went away feeling, pretty chuffed, thinking I'd done a great job. And then a few days later, I saw that same man walking down Bourke Street. And he had, it was the cord from an iron wrapped around his neck. And he looked really distressed. And I stopped him and said, what are you doing? What's going on? He lifted up his shirt. And he had this wound in his stomach. And he said to me, you did this. You actually did this to me. So I was completely confused. I said, what are you talking about? And he said, I tried to tell you, I cannot live indoors. He said, when I get inside, I feel incredibly frightened and scared. And everything just closes in on me. And he said, you forced me indoors. And this is what happened. I ended up not coping and I stabbed myself. And it was an incredibly powerful lesson to me to look beyond and to actually take time to listen. To not come in, from my sort of middle class background and think I know all the answers, but to actually take time and listen. This band continued to go out five nights a week, and we went down to, this was the most amazing story, we went down to a shoe shop in Collins Street. It's an exclusive shoe shop. And this particular night I had a volunteer with me who's a microbiologist from New Zealand, Victoria. And here was this man sleeping, and it was the strangest thing I'd ever seen. This man was sleeping in a three-piece suit, and he had his collar and tie on, and he was dressed immaculate. I was just completely confused. And we went over, and it was like a coffee or something to eat, and he spoke with this very sophisticated voice, very, very posh. And I'm thinking, this is not computing for me. I don't get what's going on. So I wandered off, and I got the coffee and got the blankets and food, and I came back. And this man and Vanessa, the volunteer, were having this unbelievable conversation about the DNA of rare birds. So I'm completely confused, thinking, what on earth is this all about? And went on for about 20 minutes, and we got back in the van, and we drove off, and I said to Vanessa, what was that? And she said, oh, well, that was stunning. She said, that conversation I had with that man is usually the conversation reserved for myself and my professional colleagues, who are microbiologists. She said, that was unbelievable. It turned out that that man was a lecturer at a university, a senior lecturer, and his wife passed away suddenly and tragically, and his whole world just caved in. And he couldn't cope, and he ended up just basically giving up and living on the streets, but couldn't give up his three-piece suit. And again, it was that, lesson to me about look beyond, actually listen, ask questions, build relationship, and amazing things start to come out. And it just completely opened my eyes to what's going on out on the streets. Our van continued to go out, and down, it's Little Bourke Street, down near Spencer Street. The building's gone now, it's been demolished, but there's an old power station. And we had to go in there because we heard there were a group of young people living in there, homeless kids. And we had a special knock that we had to do on the door, and if we didn't get the knock right, they wouldn't open the door. And the place was disgusting. There was rats down there and there was rubbish, and it was just a disgusting sort of place. And the kids would open the door just about this much, and you'd just go to work, try to build a connection, try to say to people, come outside, we can actually help you tonight and all that sort of thing. We did that on a Wednesday night, and early the next morning, I received a phone call from the police to say that a 13-year-old girl who was sleeping with that group of people had gone into a part of the building she was told not to go into, and she fell through a hole in the floor. So it was the third floor. There was a hole, and she fell to the ground. And there was a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 12-year-old that were with her when she fell. And so they called the ambulance, but apparently the paramedics didn't have their asbestos suits, so they waited for those suits to be delivered. And in the meantime, a 9-year-old, 10-year-old, and 12-year-old just cradled this young girl in their arms and waited for help. And eventually that the little girl passed away, and the 9-year-old, the 10-year-old, the 12-year-old came up to our centre at Birch Street, our cafe, and they were just a complete mess. And it really had a deep impact, as you can imagine, on our staff and on Sandy and I and on our volunteers. And it's one of those things where we could easily have sort of rationalised our way out of that situation and said, you know, we told that young person not to go in there, and, you know, where are their parents? And we could easily sort of work our way out of it, but we decided not to. And what we did was we thought, as a team, we've just got to keep thinking, we've got to keep praying about a way in which we can help prevent this sort of thing from happening again. And someone came up with the idea of, rather than us sort of sitting back at our centre at Bourke Street, you know, between 9 to 5 and waiting for people to come to us, that we'd actually find out where young people were that were sleeping rough, and we'd make a much more concerted effort to go to them. And so someone came up with the idea of this bus, and we wanted to fit it out with all sorts of things that would attract young people, you know, barbecues and Xboxes and all that sort of stuff, but actually put our services on the bus and take our services right into the middle of where young people were hanging out. So we got really excited. You know, great idea, we had no money to get this bus up and going. So we were just going around talking about it, and eventually, after a couple of months, I received a phone call from a woman who said, I'm from AXA Insurance, I've heard about this idea of the bus, we'd like to put some money towards it. Can you send me something tomorrow? I thought, this is amazing. So she said, just write something up. Do you think you'll need? How much? And I said, oh, I was just guessing. I said, oh, maybe 20,000. And straight away, she said, no problem. Get that to me in half a page or a page. It should be fine. So I said, oh, gee, 30,000 would be nice, you know. So she went quiet. She said, look, get the document to me and I'll see what I can do. So I went and spoke with a friend and who worked, you know, in the Salvation Army's fundraising area. And I said, I just had this weird conversation with this woman from AXA. So it turned out he knew this woman. So he said, I'll give her a call. And he got off the phone and said, I can't believe what you did. So I'm apologising, saying, oh, I'm sorry I asked for 30,000. You know, I got a bit excited at the moment. He says, no, they want to give you 250,000 for this bus. Not 30,000, not 20,000. So we got this amazing bus and got it all fitted out. And we work with between 700 under 25s a night, 5 nights a week around the city. And there's been some amazing stories of young people in really significant need coming to the bus and being able to get, you know, really sort of help, right, you know, appropriate help right at that particular moment, which has really helped them significantly. And it just reminds me that when you're sort of involved in this work, it's easy to think sometimes some issues are just... they're unresolvable, you know, and you just think, well, that's the way life is, and we just move on, and we think we can't do any more. But I think God calls his people to actually dip into his imagination and his creativity, and I really believe God calls us to think beyond, you know, and to think beyond perhaps what's been done in the past, and allow him to speak into our lives about potentially what could be done to help resolve some of these problems. We had... a lady coming to our centre, a young mum, and she was really distressed. And she said to us, I'm really worried, I'm in this terrible situation. So she'd been the victim of pretty horrific domestic violence, and she took her 6-year-old daughter and they went on the run. And they ended up going into a rooming house. And she said, I've just found out that in the room next door to us is a man that she's been released from prison, and he was on child sex offence charges. And she said, I'm terrified about what's going to happen to my daughter. So that was one situation that happened. Another situation around the same time that arose was there was a man who'd been homeless on and off for about 20 years. He was a pretty hardened sort of character, and we'd worked really hard to get a connection with him. And he came and saw me and he said, I've had enough. I've had enough of the streets. I want to get clean. I want to get off the streets. I really, really want to start again. I've met this woman. I really believe that something good's going to happen. Can you guys just help get me clean? So I said, no problem. So our workers connected with this man, and we did some background information on this rooming house. We got him into a rooming house, and he came and saw me really, really angry. And he said, I'll never forget these words. He said, I came to you for help, and all I received was harm. And I said, what on earth are you talking about? And he said, you put me into this rooming house. I asked you to help me get clean. And he said, the owners of that rooming house are dealing ice and all sorts of other drugs into the house to these really vulnerable people. And it turned out that we'd actually referred 40 people into these houses. These were people that were really desperate to get clean and get on their feet. And we'd referred them into this rooming house network that we thought was safe and clean. And it was the complete opposite. And so it really sort of challenged us. It was that whole idea again of, you know, you look at this problem and you think, boy, this is just huge, this problem. It's intractable, you know, there's no way through it. And yet we prayed about it, we thought it through, and I do some chaplaincy at Collingwood Football Club. So I thought, I'll go and see Collingwood. We'll just have a conversation and see what happens. So I went down there and I said, look, we've got this really significant social issue here in Melbourne that just seems to be getting worse. We're wondering if we can partner together on this. So I got a little excited and I said, what I want you to do is rent 100 houses in your name. So I said, you're out of your mind. You know, this is crazy. I'm not going to rent 100 houses. So I got over that hump and we got a little bit further down the conversation and I said, what I'd like you to do is rent 5 houses in your name and furnish them. And we'll put homeless people off the street or out of these terrible rooming houses into these houses. And we'll put all of the intensive support around these people to help get them on their feet. So we've got a psychologist, we've got housing workers that will get around these people and really help them work through their issues and start to get on their feet. So they said, okay, let's have a go. So they rented 5 houses for us a year ago and we're looking at another 5 houses. And the whole idea is that we grow our stock. So they're talking now about getting between 75 and 100 houses. Because what they want to do is actually start to put commercial pressure back on the dodgy rooming house operators. Because people will either hopefully say to the dodgy rooming house operators, we don't want to be part of your program because it's awful. We want to be part of Magpie Nest Housing, which is this program we set up with Collingwood. And so it will either force the dodgy rooming house operators to change their ways or to get out of the business. And the guys that go in there, it's really quite moving because they've come off the streets. They've often been treated really poorly by people. And they go into these houses that are beautifully furnished and they feel almost overwhelmed. And they feel like they're treated with absolute dignity and respect. And with these 5 houses that we've had, we've put some pretty colourful characters into the houses. And we haven't had one piece of damage to any of the houses or the furniture. Because we've treated people well, and they've reciprocated that, and they've treated the property as well. And we've seen some amazing things, some really hardened homeless people really starting to get back on their feet, and starting to do some amazing things with their lives. So I'll leave it there, I won't go on any longer, but I think just the key points for me have been the need to look beyond what we first see when we meet somebody that's doing it really tough. I think the other part of it has also been around just rather than being overwhelmed by what appears to be an intractable issue, allowing God to actually speak into our lives and allowing Him to stir our creativity and our imagination about what could happen. And I think the other key is around listening is a really key fact as well. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for listening.